This week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show is sponsored by Wizard Games for Guns Royale. It's available now on the App Store for free. And on this episode, we talk about where we've been the last couple weeks, including the EVE Online Fan Fest in Las Vegas, the Hearthstone Championship Tour in Burbank, California, and all the latest and greatest cool games. Don't miss it.
I know a magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends. Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Touch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number 327. Finally back to business with a normal podcast. Sorry about the last 2 weeks. We've had a lot of conflicting travel and stuff like that, which has made recording a podcast more difficult than it should be. But hopefully I picked an interesting rewind episode and then threw up a kind of impromptu interview I did at the Hearthstone Championship Tour. So hopefully no one was too disappointed. But anyway, if this is the first time you've downloaded this podcast, thanks a ton for downloading. I'm Eli, and with me is Jared. And between two of us, we've got 20 years of experience or so covering mobile games on toucharcade.com, which is the best place to go for iOS, or actually more accurately, mobile gaming news, reviews, guides, forums, all that sort of thing. It kind of look like an iOS game site, but so much of what we do is so universal now that even if you have an Android phone or whatever, it's really not a big deal. Most of everything we do, almost everything we do applies. We stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/toucharcade. We got a really cool Discord at discord.gg/toucharcade. And this podcast, as well as websites, primarily community supported. So if you like things we do, like listening to this podcast, like reading the site, there's two different ways you can support us. The first one is by going to patreon.com/toucharcade. We actually will get a video version of this podcast. If you back us, you could see us chatting in real time and fiddling around on my iPad as we kind of go through games and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. If you look at the Patreon, you could see older episodes. I think they're a month delayed or whatever between backers and non-backers. If you're not into the Patreon thing but still want to support Touch Arcade, we'd really appreciate if you do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. It's at no cost to you, and we get a small cut of anything that you buy from Amazon. We always appreciate iTunes reviews, and if you want to email us for any reason, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. With the intro out of the way, what do you want to talk about first? Talk about travel adventures?
Well, you reminded me of something when you were just talking is, I've been like irritated with Apple mood. Mm. And like today, my latest thing is my iCloud tabs aren't working. And so, you know, I've like come to rely on that as a really handy way where if I'm looking at something on my desktop, usually like an iTunes link or something, and I need to get to it on my phone, there's the handy little iCloud links thing. And that has decided to just stop working. And once something stops working, there's really like no recourse. It's just
it's the worst.
Like there's no like way to go about fixing it or whatever. And so, especially with the new Pixel phones and stuff like that, I keep daydreaming like, what would it be like to switch to Android?
iMessage always keeps me around.
Yeah, iMessage. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's funny. So if you follow Matt Ricks on Twitter, he's the guy that made Train Yard back in the day, super popular iPhone game, and in general a good dude. Just did what I was just talking about. He bought a new Pixel because he's been kind of fed up with Apple stuff for a while. And the Pixels are getting great reviews and stuff like that. And so it's been funny to watch in the last few days, kind of in real time, realizing that Android still, for all its, you know, advancements and stuff like that, still kind of sucks. Yeah. And so he's like, likes the phone itself, but like using Android, he just seems to be not having a great time with it. And so I kind of feel like that would be what my experience would be too. I'd be like, screw Apple, this stuff sucks. And then you go to Android and you'd be like, well, they have an equal number of things that suck just in different ways.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I've kind of thought about, like, so I've gotten Android devices randomly sent to me over the mm-hmm. years, and like always kind of try. Like I'll pop my SIM in it and, you know, give it a good week or something like that to you know, give it the good old college try. But like the Apple, the lack of the Apple ecosystem is what always keeps me coming back. Because like
it's a big deal.
Once you start, like, you know, so say, you know, you give a, you know, got a Pixel 2, you know, or whatever, and gave it a week to try it out and see if you liked it, or whatever the return window is if you went and bought one from a cellular store. But like it doesn't take long before you're like, oh man, I really miss things like AirDrop and you know, having all my messages go to all my devices and all this other stuff. And like, yeah, you know, there are Android equivalents to all that, because like I have friends that are, you know, hardcore Android people. And whenever I say stuff like that, they're like, well, you can just use WeChat or Facebook Messenger. And then there's this other thing that works just like AirDrop that you have to install like this client thing on your computer. And like, you can do everything. It's just a matter of like Apple stuff just does it already for me.
Usually. Or at the very least, you're just programmed to their way of doing things, so you know how to use it all. Whereas if you hop over to Android and want to do all those things, like you said, install weird things and do stuff that maybe not a lot of people know how to do. So
that's the problem. Like, there's been many times, like, especially I talked about it like last year when I was going through my saga of the broken MacBook, that I've been like, dude, I am so over the Apple ecosystem. Like, let me out.
I remember.
And it's like, you just, they get you in so deep.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, even if tomorrow I was like, all right, I'm going to, you know, throw my Mac in the trash. I'm buying a, you know, nice PC laptop. I'm getting an Android phone and like an Android smartwatch and stuff. Like, the transition would be so gnarly of figuring out like, all right, well, how do I export, you know, 10 years worth of photos out of the Apple Photos app now into whatever you use on Android, like Google Pictures or whatever they call it, Picasa or whatever.
Photos, I think it's just called Photos now.
You know, like all this other stuff is just like overwhelming to think about.
Yeah. So I don't know. It really kind of bugs me, but I do feel like I hate jumping on the train of like, you know, Apple's different after Steve Jobs and stuff like that. But I think there's a lot of truth to that, because before it just sort of felt like, man, you know, Apple stuff really was simple and it really did in most cases just work. And you'd be like irritated when it didn't have a certain feature you'd really want that, you know, Android people have had for years or something like that. But for the most part, like, you could still do your day-to-day things and everything would just work okay. And I feel like, especially with like iOS 11 and, I don't know, I feel like Apple's just really gotten overly complicated the last few years of hardware and software updates, where it's like the simplicity feels like it's gone, especially when you have to, like, you know, I'm like struggling to find out like where a certain setting is or something in settings because they decided to change which menu it's on.
It says a lot that they've also added the ability to search in settings because there's so much shit in there now.
Yeah, and it just feels like there's layers, they're layering on top. And things are getting cluttered and kind of messy. And I feel like they didn't used to be that way. And so I don't know where that will ever stop, or if it'll ever stop being that way, or if we're at a point now where it's just like Apple's going to be, you know, just be as, just as complicated as every other phone maker.
Well, I mean, it felt like for years that they've just been like bolting things on top of iOS.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of reached a point where like, every direction you swipe does a different like system-wide thing that you may not even know about or like know how to trigger or whatever else, which I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like I still don't use a lot of like the system-wide gestures, like the four-finger app switching on my iPad and stuff like that or whatever. Like, and when I do it on accident, it's like jarring. It's like, whoa, what happened? And I someone that uses iOS devices for a freaking job, you know? So like, but no, what's really been bugging me about Apple stuff recently, and when I say recently, I mean in the last, like, I don't know, like 5 years, maybe even now, is that when you used to, and this is back before the iPhone, like when you went to an Apple store, it was like going to a Radio Shack in the 1980s, you know, it was like the people there were like legitimate experts and like, oh, my iPad just turned off. Oops. The people there were like legitimate experts, and if you went in and had like some weird problem with your Mac or whatever, like the sales dude that's standing there can probably get you like 95% of the way there. And if there's an actual like hardware issue, like the dude at the, I don't know, did they call it the Genius Bar back then? I don't remember, whatever they called their support thing back then, like could just open it up and fix it right there. Like that was the level of overall expertise that you had at the Apple store. And now it's like a dread going there. And I dread like having anything break inside of the Apple ecosystem, because it's like when we went and got my girlfriend's Apple Watch and iPhone and stuff, it's like the people there on launch days like know absolutely nothing. It's like they sat through a YouTube video training session, mm-hmm. and all this stuff, and the support stuff is just as bad. Like they they used to fly geniuses out to Cupertino to do this like really intensive kind of like Mac training thing, and they've since switched that to like some kind of like webinar thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like a big mystery as to why, like, you know, I don't know. It just sucks. It feels like the Apple Store used to be this place that you would go to like talk to people that knew their shit. Yeah. And now it's like when you go to Home Depot and you're talking to some teenager that like knows where nothing is, doesn't know what anything does or where it goes or how you use it or anything else. Where it's like, you remember where you used to be able to go to like a non-chain, like real deal old hardware store, and it'd be like the old dude working there could tell you like 800 different ways to solve whatever problem you had.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that's the main difference between like the Apple Store of, you know, the pre-iPhone era and the post-iPhone era.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Anyway, like their support sucks too, because it's like a friend of mine just got a new Apple Watch and like was on day 15, which is just outside of his return window. And like, I think, I don't remember what he said the problem was, like the digital crown wasn't working right, or the button wasn't working right, or something like that. So Apple wasn't like, oh, well, let's just swap it out. It was like, all right, well, we need to send it into the repair depot. Mm-hmm. They get it at the repair depot. There's like, there's nothing wrong with this, and send it back. Mm-hmm. And went to the Apple Store again. It's like, oh, well, let's send it out. And it's like, dude, we already did this. Mm-hmm. We already did this. I've been without my watch for like 3 weeks now or whatever. I don't know. But anyway.
Oh, Apple. I feel better after ranting about that.
What can you do? Yeah, they're, I don't know, a hard company to love sometimes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the last 2 weeks, the reason I've been gone, and you know, Jared's been doing personal stuff, I've been doing work stuff. 2 weeks ago, I went to the EVE Vegas Fan Fest, which if you don't know anything about EVE, EVE Online is this giant MMORPG that's been going on forever. It's basically a spaceship-based MMO with like the catch being, or like I guess the draw of the game being, like the space is vast and there's different territories of space where like this area has like rules and you can't attack other players, and like it kind of, I don't really know all the terminology, it's like different security levels, and like, but most of the interesting stuff in the game takes place out in what they call NullSec, which is no security at all, where it's just like players do whatever they want, and like, you know, there's player run like security corporations and like all sorts of stuff, and it's like there's all these extremely fascinating interactions that happen when you basically create like a space sandbox and then allow players to exist in as many or as few rules as they want. Like you can play the game and like never leave the super protected area and like play for years, you know, or you can go out and like, you know, become a space pirate in an area where there's no punishment other than like, you know, the retribution of other players coming to hunt you down if you decide to like blow someone up or steal something or whatever. So it was pretty cool because I have tried playing EVE Online before, and it's just like too technical of a game for me. Like it feels like too much like work, because a lot of the game is like this really intricate like financial management kind of spreadsheety sort of stuff, which like I don't want to do expense reports and stuff for fun in my spare time, you know. But EVE is one of my favorite games to read about because, like, you know, you have these like day-to-day grinds, which I found to be super boring, but all those things with like a giant group of people eventually culminate into these like massive dramatic space battles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And reading about these and watching videos about them after the fact is like super entertaining because, you know, they're effectively condensing down like a year's worth of massive intrigue and gameplay and stuff into like a 3,000 word article, you know, that you can just kind of like read and be like, wow, that sounds awesome. And I would love to be on that level, but I just can't commit to it, you know? So it was cool being there and like being around people that were like the big players in those sort of things, you know, because like who goes to these, you know, who travels to something like that? And like, you know, guild leaders or corporation leaders and other like big movers and shakers in the EVE world, right? So it was kind of cool being at like parties and, you know, like listening to, you know, people talk spaceships and stuff like that. But the reason I was there was for their upcoming mobile game, which right now is codenamed Project Aurora, which is basically like if you took the basic idea of EVE Online but turned it into like a mobile game, kind of like progress idle clicker game of sorts. So it was pretty cool. There's a lot of people that were disappointed that it, you know, of course, always disappointed that like it's not like they just released an iPad client for EVE, right? Because Project Aurora exists inside of its, you know, like own secondary universe, and it's not connected to EVE Online in any way beyond like the theme and all sorts of stuff. But, you know, from what I played, so they everyone that came to the event, they either sent out a Google beta thing or a test flight invite and opened up the servers for the 3 days that the event run or event ran. And it was actually like super duper fun playing the game because like there's like a sort of PvP kind of team-based aspect to it. And I feel like it was like a million times more compelling because it would be like you would be attacking someone that was like on the other side of like the theater conference room thing that you were in, you know, which I thought was just always like pretty neat because, you know, you hear people like bullshitting about it and like, you know, bragging about stuff they did to like the people they did it to and stuff, which I feel like is a million times more compelling than like, oh, I kicked the shit out of this Clash of Clans base, you know, Bong Smoker 420 is no more. It's like, dude, you never meet that person or know who they are or whatever else. So I feel like I found myself enjoying the game way more than I would have otherwise because of that element. So it'll be interesting to see how sticky it is when it actually comes out. But we'll see. So they don't really have any kind of like ETA on when it's coming or whatever. This is like the basically like a super limited beta of something that they were working on. So I think people like it though. You know, progress progress kind of builder games do really well on the App Store and people seem to like them. So it definitely had that hook to it that was like, you know, you close the game and then come back 10 minutes later and there'd be like all these other things you could update or upgrade or move your guys around or whatever else. It was kind of hard to put down in that.
I think at this point, as long as it's not a Game of War reskin, you can be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said about that. So then last weekend, I was at the Hearthstone Summer Championships at the new Blizzard Arena in Burbank, which... it's pretty cool. It's the studio that they actually used to film The Tonight Show in with like Jay Leno and even going older with Johnny Carson.
Wow.
So that was actually pretty cool to be in the same kind of place that was. Because they gave us like a tour of the building and I wanted to take more photos, but I wasn't really super sure like what was off limits and stuff because it's like an actual like operating stage. And studio with like more because so they have rented three stages in this like larger Burbank Studios kind of operation. So like walking around behind the scenes is like you're seeing stuff that like you probably shouldn't take photos of kind of thing. So it was really neat because like behind the scenes, because the building in this particular studio that the Blizzard Arena is in has that history, like they've maintained the kind of like art and look of a lot of the stuff. So it's like, you know, what it looked like when the Johnny Carson show was running and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. Like a lot of like neat murals and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. It was, it's kind of interesting that esports has become such a thing that a company like Blizzard, you know, is renting out like a real deal, like broadcast studio with room for a large audience and stuff to watch video games.
It's weird.
So like their main studio that they have, they have all the set pieces that they move in and out depending on like which game they're showing. So like I think right now they're alternating between Hearthstone, or they were alternating between Hearthstone and Overwatch each weekend. Which is pretty cool because like behind the scenes you could see how they were like staged all the Overwatch stuff that then like roll out when they move the Hearthstone stuff backstage and stuff. So that was cool. But yeah, like the scale of the production is nuts, and I feel like when you watch on Twitch you really just have no idea that it's like, you know, there's like real deal like professional boom operators, and you go backstage and there's like a entire like CNN control center of like all these different screens, and you know, a couple dozen people watching these like NASA looking consoles with all these buttons they're pushing, and like like it's crazy because like, you know, when I stream on Twitch, like I open up OBS, point my webcam at me and hit go. And I think that like a lot of people kind of think that these kind of more produced streams are just like, you know, one level of complication above that, you know. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, it's like they're in their own universe of all this stuff. So that was pretty neat to see. I definitely, if you're in the LA area for any reason, and even if you like really don't care about the particular games that Blizzard's running, I would still try to go to an event at the Blizzard Arena, just because like it's just really unbelievable to see that this is kind of how all this has evolved, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like if you would have told me, God, I don't know, I guess like my first involvement in like anything that was close to an esport would be like playing like early Counter-Strike betas, where they would like do these like online leagues where, you know, the website was basically just like, you know, scheduling and tournament brackets and stuff like that, that would turn into, you know, a multi-million dollar company like Blizzard, like being like, hey, let's just rent out studio space and have a permanent spot to do this with, you know, a freaking concession stand and everything else that you would think of, you know? So it was really pretty wild that I don't know. It was something. I guess.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think that that's the direction that esports needs to go, having, you know, high production values and, you know, an audience and things like that. But I also think, like, I mean, there's only so many Blizzards in the world that are capable of doing something like this. So.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing is, like, it's kind of interesting talking to the Blizzard esports people, because so they work their games on like annual seasons, more or less. Mm-hmm. Where you know, they establish like how the tournament brackets are going to work and how points are going to work and all this, like the schedule of stuff, at the beginning of every year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once they set that, like they make changes again next year or mm-hmm. you know, the following year after that. So when I was talking to them, I had like all this, like all these ideas for things that would make Hearthstone better and things they should change and stuff. And it's really crazy how on top of things they are, because it's like, nope, already doing that. Not doing that exactly, but you'll see when we announce it and you'll be very happy. Like it's just really neat. Like they're a company that like really, really, really is on the ball and knows their shit and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, they talk about Hearthstone being this game that could potentially last like decades, like Magic the Gathering. So it's like, mm-hmm. really neat to see these early foundations of a game that now is only like 4 years old, which mm-hmm. really doesn't feel like it with how much all this has kind of, you know, feel so refined and stuff like that in such a short amount of time. But what no one could really give me a straight answer on, though, and I feel like this is going to potentially be a problem with esports, is that people are really only capable of paying attention to so many things, right? Mm-hmm. I think we've, you know, used the example before where it's like, you know, if you follow actual real deal sports, like you probably watch like baseball in the summer and then football in the winter, or, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't know what else, like, you know, maybe mm-hmm. hockey in the winter instead of football mm-hmm. or whatever else. Like, you know, you only have so much personal bandwidth to follow these things. Right.
Yeah.
And each individual game that is its own esport, like has its own, like, you know, people to know and players to be aware of and, you know, current metagame and like strategy and stuff like that. So like for me, like I am really only capable of following like Hearthstone and League of Legends. And like, mm-hmm. I've kind of leaned more towards Hearthstone than League of Legends when it comes to stuff in the last like year or so, just cause I haven't had too much time to play it. But like, you know, every other game is trying to do like their own esport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if each of these are going to find some kind of meaningful audience, you know,
mm-hmm.
because like you reach a point where it's like, I just don't have time to watch another Twitch stream.
Yeah.
Right. Which is going to be interesting. It's going to be, and the parallel to mobile in this is that it seems like a lot of people aren't as interested in discovering new games as they used to be anymore, because they have like, you know, Clash of Clans or Hearthstone or whatever else, you know, these mm-hmm. these games which are have so much content in them and are mm-hmm. constantly updated so much that like really if you had Hearthstone and Clash of Clans installed on your phone, you got into those two games, you will always have something to do in both those games.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to look anywhere else. And like the esports kind of side of it is similar. Like there's always, you know, maybe not a main Hearthstone championship tour thing to watch, but there'll be like a college thing to watch or like some mm-hmm. kind of invitational, and like League of Legends is the same, you know? So it's like, I don't know. I'm really curious because there's so much money going into esports right now.
Well, it's not even taking into consideration like having a job and going to work and like having school and all these other things like that take up your time. So yeah, it's difficult to keep up with everything.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's gonna be curious to see if like all the investments in esports stuff are gonna kind of taper off as people kind of realize like no one can keep up with watching the competitive scene of 100 different games. Yeah. And then when that turns into, you know, like 1,000 different games or whatever else, it's just gonna be way too much for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, you reach a point even like, you know, where the games aren't even able to be displayed on Twitch anywhere because there's so many different ones. You know, it's that discovery is gonna become an issue, which kind of a weird problem, I guess. So
yeah.
I don't know, but Hearthstone's always cool, so we talk about it a lot. But also in the esports scene last weekend as well was the Mobile Masters Las Vegas, which is an Amazon thing where they played World Tanks Blitz, Vainglory, and Power Rangers Legacy. There is that Counter-Strike, like, first-person shooter, that Bullet Strike, I think. Is that the title of it?
Bullet Strike is one of them, yeah.
One of them, I don't remember, they pulled out because of the Vegas shooting or whatever, which...
Oh, wow, well, that's probably for the best.
I don't know. Well, so that was the other weird thing about being at the EU Fan Fest, like, 3 days after that happened, was it was like, it never happened at all.
Really?
Which, yeah, it's kind of weird. I was talking to my Lyft driver about it on the way from the airport, you know, because I, like, had no idea what the vibe of Las Vegas was going to be like. You know, I was like, you know, what's going on around town, like, after the shooting and stuff like that? He's like, oh, everything's back to normal.
Weird.
Because he was like, dude, like, think about it. Like, Las Vegas is a town that exists on tourism. You know, it's like they don't have the luxury of being like, all right, well, we're just shutting stuff down while we figure this out. And, you know, like, pay respects and stuff like that. Like, I don't remember. Like, there was someone, the guy was saying, I don't remember what the numbers were. He got them off, like, the local news of, like, if they just decide to, like, close the strip, like, the amount of millions of dollars per day that would be lost would be, like, turn the Nevada economy upside down inside of like a week.
I believe it.
So I don't know, but anyway, Mobile Masters is pretty cool to see that, you know, they're kind of trying to do these kind of mobile esports things. But again, you know, it kind of falls into the same problem that I just mentioned, in that, like, even as someone that you know, actively covers mobile, you know, for a job, like, it's hard to stay on top of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even tell you who a pro Vainglory player is, or a pro World of Tanks Blitz, or especially a pro Power Rangers Legacy Wars player. Like, I don't even know. So
yeah,
it's one of those things. Like, I feel like they're trying to make esports happen, and I don't know if there's a demand for esports in those particular games.
Yeah,
you know.
No, I agree. They try to force the issue a lot.
Yeah, because, like, if you look at the curve of how Hearthstone became an esport, it was like, you know, it was a really good PC game that people started streaming on Twitch. People found their favorite streamers, and then, you know, the necessity of battling these streamers together for entertainment kind of turned into, like, the earliest days of Hearthstone esports. So, you know, that was a very easy and natural transition with a fan base that was hungry for that sort of thing. But it's like, when you release a game like Power Rangers Legacy Wars, and then 3 days later is like, hey, you should come to our, you know, esports tournament. It's like, I don't even know what this game is, much less who anyone that would play it would be, or why I would be interested in watching it, you know? So.
No, I agree. I feel like you need to build those things up more naturally and develop an audience instead of just sort of trying to shoehorn it in.
Yeah. So I guess grats to Team Solo Mid, Hate Us More, and whatever, or whoever Dunk SB412 is.
Word.
So, good job, Mobile Masters. Let's see. So I guess we'll blast through the news real quick, or at least relevant stories I picked out to talk about. So Crescent Moon's Runic Rampage is submitted to Apple. Hopefully it'll be released pretty soon. It's like kind of an isometric hack and slash RPG, if you haven't seen the trailer. It's pretty cool. Crescent Moon stuff always resonates well in our community, so it should be pretty cool. Game Dev Tycoon is going to hit the App Store on November 28th. Which it was a pretty big hit with, like, you know, the streamers and stuff like that when it came out on Steam. And this game actually had a pretty amusing sort of thing that they did with simulating. It's like, so the basis of the game is that, you know, you play, it's like Game Dev Story, but you know, like,
yeah,
it's like someone took Game Dev Story and like really fleshed it out into like a real deal, like more full mm-hmm. game instead of how simple Game Dev Story was. Not that Game Dev Story is a bad game, but
right.
So anyway, they pirated their game themselves. Like, they uploaded a pirated version of it, with the catch being that you would reach a point in your game progress running a studio where, like, you were never able to progress because you your studio went bankrupt because of piracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reaction to this was really just sort of unbelievable. Like, they check the story on TetraK, we have a link to the actual like developer blog post, but the level of irony of people going to these various forums or other places, you know, where they're talking about the game being like, oh, mm-hmm. this is bullshit, like it can't progress, yeah. like every time I make a great game and
your game's broken,
you know, I put it out and everything yeah. just gets pirated and I don't make any money, like what the hell's going on? It's like,
yeah,
holy cow, like these people are like, they stole the game that's like teaching them mm-hmm. this lesson of what happens when you steal a game, but they like the mental disconnect just is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always game. I am a fan of like the clever, you know, piracy things that people will think up sometimes where, you know, if you have a pirated copy of a game, you can't pass the second boss because he's too hard or something weird like that. And I thought this was like especially clever mm-hmm. and poignant. And it is kind of funny to see people, you know, who pirated the game getting up in arms over their own games being pirated yeah, in like, the so game. It's just so meta.
Here's one of the posts that they highlight on their developer blog is, you know, they blurred out who posted it or where it's from or whatever. But this guy says, why are there so many people that pirate it? Ruins me. I had like 5 million. Then people suddenly started pirating everything I made, even if it got really good ratings. Not fair.
It's not fair. You're right.
This was like my favorite thing of 2013 when it mm-hmm. happened. So
yeah, that's awesome. Besides that point though, like I've always wondered, like, why isn't this game on mobile like before? You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like such a great fit. So.
So it should be. I'm super excited for this. So it comes out in I guess a little bit more than a month. What the 28th is what? That's like the. Week after Thanksgiving.
Cool.
So keep your eyes peeled for that. Too bad it's not coming out the week of Thanksgiving, because that'd be something really cool to play while you're sitting around ignoring you know yeah. whatever's going on.
Yeah.
So Half Brick's kind of going ham with Fruit Ninja board games. There's three in the works, which I don't know. I don't want to be too pessimistic about that, because like the Temple Run board game was actually legitimately pretty cool. So
yeah.
Just kind of interesting how they're continuing to milk the Fruit Ninja brand, I guess. Banner Saga 3 is still in the works. Coming next year, there's a new kind of trailer with an art reveal, which, you know, spoilers, the art style is the same as the previous one, but it's still pretty cool to get awesome. Excited over. Banner Saga games are...
They're real good.
Really cool, a lot of fun. There was a stream this week of Magic the Gathering Arena, which if you missed us talking about that in the past, it's basically kind of a blend between Magic Duels of the Planeswalkers and Magic the Gathering Online proper, mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. like it's sort of a free-to-play Hearthstone-ized version of Magic that, instead of the weird limitations of Duels of the Planeswalkers, now is like a full-featured Magic game. Mm-hmm. Client looks really cool. Super excited for this. I guess the closed beta is starting reasonably soonish, so hope to get in on that. What's so silly about this game is how coy everyone's being about you know, whether or not it's going to be a mobile game, when it's like people in Twitch chat during the stream were asking, like, is this also coming to PC or just mobile?
Yeah,
so it's like so obvious that it's a mobile game. But they're like, you know, when I email them, I'm like, hey, can we please get access to the closed beta so we can start covering it? And they're like, well, it's PC only. It's not a mobile game.
It's yeah.
Like, all right, dude, like, calm the fuck on.
They're like really doubling down on that. And like, I'm curious if their stubbornness will get the best of them and they won't release it on mobile. They'll be like, screw you guys, told you, PC only.
Dude,
which would be terrible for them because nobody will play it.
Wizards has done some confusing things, but I feel like even that is beyond what they're capable of. So you read this thing about Street Fighter 4 Champion Edition. It's got new characters, the price drop, and what is the solution to rage quitters that you mentioned here?
Can I interject first and say that somebody pointed out, I forget who it was when we were talking about this game when it came out, that it's never been Championship Edition in any Street Fighter game ever. It's always been Champion
Edition.
I've
always said Championship Edition.
Me too, and I don't know what that is. I'm like curious to know if there's other people that have had this problem where just, I don't know, I've always thought it was Championship Edition, and so feel kind of stupid that it's
always been that. No, come on, that can't possibly be true.
Look it up. Look up any Street Fighter game. They're all Champion Edition, not Championship. It really screwed me up. But so anyway, as far as this update, this is the second update that they had already announced was coming out. Adds three more new characters for a total of six new since the initial version.
Whoa, but what was really Street cool Fighter is like, 2 is Champion Edition.
I know. Doesn't that screw you up that you're like, there's no way. But yeah, so, well, whatever. But anyway, yeah, so people, I think the main complaint from the Street Fighter Mobile faithful has been there was no penalty for people that rage quit in the online matches. So you could basically just be about to lose and dump out of the game, and there was no penalty for either end. The person that was about to beat you doesn't get a win, and so it sucks for them. And then that rage quitter kind of gets thrown back into the pool, and you could get matched up again against them again, which sucks. And so their solution for this with this new update is that if somebody quits out of an online match, the AI just takes over. And then so you're allowed to finish out your match, and hopefully you would beat the AI and get your win that you would be thinking you'd be getting against the actual person. And then I believe there's a new medal system too, where if you have a gold medal next to your name, that means you've never quit out of a match. And if you have a silver, it means you've done it less than 20 times or something like that. If you're bronze, cool. It means you've done it a lot. And so even if you're matching up with someone, you can be like, oh, this dude's bronze. Like, I'm out of here. So I don't know. I guess that doesn't totally address the problem, too, of if you have a legitimate disconnect thing. I guess that'll count against you as a rage quit or whatever. But I think that's where the silver medal comes in, where it's like, you know, less than 20 times. Yeah. Hey, things happen, you know, whatever. So
does
I don't
that
know,
reset hopefully. Ever? Is that like 20 times in a month or like ever?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. There's no real specifics on how it exactly works. But I'm just glad they're doing something, because I've seen too many people complaining about this before. I don't really care enough to take it seriously to where, I mean, if somebody quits on me and I'm about to beat them, that sucks. And that person has to live with being a loser. But I don't know. It never really bothered me too much. But the people, there's a pretty competitive scene for this mobile version. So I think this is something that will make them happy. So
yeah. Well, that's cool. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a neat solution to have a badge of shame for people who quit out a lot. Well, hey, let's take a quick break and get a word in from our sponsors before we finish out the rest of the story. I kind of lost track of time. So stick with us. We will be right back. Guns Royale is a 16-person PvP battle royale built from the ground up for iOS. Guns Royale takes the intense survival action of the battle royale game mode and brings it to iOS in an approachable top-down perspective. Guns Royale features bite-sized competitive matches where the player starts with nothing. Players will have to race to scrounge for weapons and gear to have a hope of being the last man standing. A deep set of unlockables will keep the player coming back for more. Guns Royale also features a bonus AR mode, so you can experience right on your coffee table. Additionally, Guns Royale is featured by Apple as one of the new games we love. All right, guys, we're back. Let's see. So continuing going along with the news real quick. You know, big surprise, the Pocket Morty's is still getting updated. There's 50 new characters to get that are coming soon from season 3. I hope that they include some kind of callback to the sauce drama. Did you follow this at all?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been playing Pocket Morty's even since they've been releasing all the new characters and stuff, but I don't know if they've addressed it in the game yet or not, but the sauce drama has been pretty interesting. Mm-hmm.
So, Cliff Notes, if you have no idea what we're talking about when we say sauce drama, let me tell you the stupidest thing that's happened on the internet in quite some time. Mm-hmm. Potentially in the last year, if not more. Although we do live in weird times now, so that's a bold statement to say. Anyway, so when I was going to Las Vegas, my girlfriend, I don't know how she found out about this, but she was like, oh, they're doing this, they're releasing limited edition Szechuan sauce at, a few McDonald's. Is the one that is on the Las Vegas Strip is one of the ones that is going to have it.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, all right, cool. Like, I'll swing by there, I guess. If you want me to, grab some and bring it home or whatever? Like, didn't know anything about it. And, like, that was the limit that she knew was that, here's just the list of McDonald's. It was basically, like, if you have... sounds super lame to say, but like a flagship McDonald's. So like, the big one on the Vegas Strip, like the huge one in downtown Chicago on Michigan Avenue, I think, and like other kind of similar McDonald's in like big iconic locations, basically, where the McDonald's are going to have Szechuan sauce. So I kind of assumed it was like, oh, all right, cool. I'll just, swing up there at some point during the day when I have time, like maybe, carve out and, grab a Lyft real quick and go get lunch there, nonchalant trip to McDonald's, right? No big deal.
No.
oh my God. So what ended up happening was that the list of locations each had like 20 packets of the sauce.
Yeah.
And I think with a collectible poster, but I don't know if there was a poster with each sauce or fewer posters or whatever else, but, so people lined up in the morning.
Yeah.
And we're just going absolutely apeshit over McNugget sauce. Like there were videos. So the problem is like the people that work at McDonald's, like they weren't, anything at all. It was like, oh, here's one extra box of sauce. Here's a little bit of Szechuan sauce. Like, have fun kind of thing. Like there wasn't any kind of like organization to what was happening or anything else. So you just had this like massive swath of different experiences of people, like, because some McDonald's were like, one sauce per person, we're giving them out at 2 o'clock, get in line. Other ones were like, like people were going in for breakfast during the, like 6 a.m. and they're like, hey, you got any of that Szechuan sauce? Oh, cool. Yeah. Give me 5 packets or whatever.
Yeah.
And like
single packets were selling for like $200-$300 on Etsy and stuff.
Like I saw one on eBay and I don't know if it was like joke bids or whatever. They got up to like $500-$600 there's another article I saw of like someone that traded an old car for one packet of sauce. I mean, admittedly it was, like a old beater Volkswagen that, barely ran, but still like the factory remains. And then there was like videos online of people like standing in McDonald's chanting, give us sauce.
Oh,
and
God,
like,
it was so obnoxious.
All this other stuff.
So the whole interesting thing about this phenomenon to me is that after trying to go see the Rickmobile and seeing how many people showed up, I was like, when they announced the McDonald's thing, I was like, oh, I wonder if there's one near me. And there was, and I was like, there's no way I'm even going to try and go there today. Cause there's one in my entire Sacramento is a pretty big region. There was one. And so I was like, no, there's no way. And then, so I didn't even like entertain the thought of going to go try and get some sauce. But the other dumb thing is that McDonald's has very cheekily tried to attach themselves to the Rick and Morty portion of the Szechuan sauce thing, but it was never like a Rick and Morty thing.
No, that was, like,
Was because they have new chicken tenders or something like that. And so there was like 8 or 9 different sauces they were highlighting. And one of them was just happened to be Szechuan, which just happened to be this real Rick and Morty meme thing they created over this past 9 months or whatever. And so it's like McDonald's knew what they were doing, but man, they tried to get in on the popularity of something that was popular on the internet without having to like be officially associated with it. And it really came back to bite them. But even if not, like whoever organized this whole promotion for McDonald's is terrible at it, because you sent like a handful of packets of sauce to this thing that you knew you were hoping would become this huge crowded phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so it just is all around just very sucky. The Rick and Morty people felt bad because they had nothing to actually do with any of this.
Right. That was kind of interesting. So I missed the morning drama because I was, at in Pacific time, so I slept later than normal anyway, and then was like busy with the Eve thing. So like I didn't find all this out until it was like 1 p.m. or whatever, and I was like, oh, I'll run up to McDonald's or whatever now, and I was like looking at Twitter and was like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah,
because
it was like, really something else.
Like people were angry at like the real deal, like, you know, like Justin Roiland and like the Ricky Morty Twitter account, thinking that like they were the ones who did this, when in actuality it was like McDonald's just made it a thing.
And to be honest, it's like such a stupid thing that I bet they all wish it didn't blow up as much as it did. Like, it was kind of funny when McDonald's was acknowledging, oh, Szechuan sauce, and the head chef of McDonald's was like, we're going to make more, and they're sending special bottles out to Justin Roiland. It's just, you know, I thought that was kind of cute and amusing, but then it just, like most of the Rick and Morty things this past season, the joke got old quick, but it didn't stop. And you're just like, oh my God, can we just stop hearing about Szechuan sauce? And so now I guess McDonald's is going to bring it back in a more permanent, maybe not permanently, but they're bringing back a lot more. I think it'll be a normal sauce you can get for a while now, to where it's not even going to be this exclusive thing. So if you bought a packet for $500 online, you probably didn't need to do that.
Yeah.
It's weird. The whole thing is weird.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. It was just so stupid. It's like, I don't know why they didn't, like, if they were going to do this, like, why not do like a proper promotion and do like, I don't know, like scratch off tickets,
it's totally,
or like,
no,
a raffle, or, you know, something. Like, they could have done something way cool and like even made it like a charity thing or whatever. Like, if it was like, oh, go down to your McDonald's and you can buy a raffle ticket for $1 or whatever, you know, to get invited to like the special Rick and Morty night where you get, you know, Szechuan sauce with the new chicken tenders or whatever. Like, I'd be like, yeah, sure, here's my $1. Like, that's cool. Yeah.
It was handled super poorly.
But anyway, yeah. So hopefully the Pocket Mortys get some kind of nod to that ridiculousness. That would be good. So anyway, sorry for the tangent. But so Warhammer Quest 2 came out this week, and a lot of people that, well, not a lot, but, you know, enough that to make some noise, are having crashing issues, and it seems to specifically be happening on older devices that are running anything that isn't iOS 11, so like iOS 10 and stuff like that. And the developers are already on top of it. They've submitted an update that they hope will help, but are still kind of tracking down the bugs. I think it's a memory issue or something like that, which kind of makes sense, I guess.
I'm pretty sure this update came out and hasn't totally fixed the problem, but I think it fixed it for some people.
Yeah, so they've said if you update to iOS 11, it'll fix it, but, you know, that's not a great solution if you're holding out for, you know, 32-bit games you still need to play, or the Touch Arcade app or something like that. But I still think it's a safe purchase, because like the developers are very aware of the issue. It's not like they're, you know, it's not like this is a 2K game and, you know, it's a complete wall of silence and stuff like that. And like, who knows if it'll either be fixed. Like, they're actively working on this problem. So
this game's going to be getting some love for a long time.
Yeah. So Warhammer Quest 2, $5. Pretty cool. Check it out. Approaching Halloween, we are getting a bunch of different Halloween updates now. They're starting to drizzle in, with the first one, probably the biggest one, being Pokemon Go. So there's like, I don't know, some kind of ghost Pokemon or something like that. Ghastly, Drowsy, Cubone, I don't know, spooky Pokemon. I sound like such an old person talking about Pokemon and the kids these days and stuff. But anyway, if you're into Pokemon Go, there's more Pokemon to catch, so. That's the story. Mm-hmm. That's about all of it. Crash of Cars, which is another cool game, kind of isometric car battler sort of thing. It's also got its Halloween update, which adds kind of like a new spooky map and other things like that. That's pretty cool. This time of year, it seems like most games that get updated a lot have Halloween themed stuff, so I'm sure there'll be a lot more. So keep your eyes peeled on updates. So the Minecon Earth stuff, which takes place on November 18th, sounds like it's getting even cooler, with Will Arnett announced as the actual like host of the stream.
Which, that's cool.
I mean, I guess it makes sense. If Minecraft's a billion-dollar IP, like, they're not going to, like, why not hire some, you know, likable celebrity dude as your host, right?
I do love me some Will Arnett.
Starborn Anarchist got updated with 64-bit support. If you never played this game, it's very good. It was like a spaceship builder, dual stick shooter kind of thing. Does that seem like a good way to describe it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a dual stick space shooter, but the whole thing is like, as you play, you gather parts and you gather blueprints, and then you can build your own ships. And it's super fun to kind of like fiddle around and, you know, put jet engines in places that maybe they shouldn't go, or, you know, weapons in weird places. I mean, you can definitely just waste hours kind of building weird ships and seeing what happens. So
what I like about this is that the game is kind of like a sandbox when it comes to your actual ship construction, and it's up to you to like either build like a good ship or just an absolutely terrible ship.
Yeah, I mean, I've had so many laughs just building the dumbest not working ship ever. So,
but I've also like had really ridiculous games where like you get a lot of drops and like just make this like Death Star looking thing that just like barely moves at all, but has so many guns that are just killing everything.
So check it out. I'm glad I got saved from the apocalypse.
For sure. So Callie's Caves 4 is coming on November 7th. If you've never played any of these games, they're really, really good. Callie's Caves 3 is actually it's free to try, right? With a one-time unlock or something, if I remember correctly.
I believe so, yeah.
I don't really remember how you pay for it, but it's definitely free to get more than enough of a taste to get excited for this.
Two and three are both free. One is no longer around because it was too old. But it's kind of okay. This has been an interesting series to follow because the games just keep getting better and more complex. And three was kind of like already, it felt like, okay, wow, you've really found your footing. And this is like such a great action platformer now. Kind of like the rough edges of indie game development were smoothed away and stuff like that. And so four, I'm sort of expecting to be even better. So,
really cool. I dig it. So last news story they have is just going through Sean's really good article that we published this week about the best action RPGs for iPhone and iPad. So if you are at all into action RPGs, you probably already have most of these games. They're pretty much classics that we post about a ton.
Such a good list, though.
It's a fantastic list. So if you are looking for any, like, you know, quote-unquote real games to play, this is a great starting point to fill out your collection or any holes that you might be missing. So Battleheart Legacy, amazing game. Cat Quest, also really good. Crashlands, also great. Exiled Kingdoms RPG. Jade Empire, which is actually a port of an Xbox game, which is really good. Ravensword Shadowlands, we've talked about a ton. Secret of Mana, I think everyone knows. The World Ends With You Solo Remix is still pretty good, even though it's kind of old. Titan Quest, also very good, kind of Diablo-like sort of thing. And then I've pronounced this Wise Chronicles, and every time I do, someone corrects me on Twitter and says like Yis or something like that, or Yis.
I always say Wise, and I'll never not say Wise.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is like one of those things that like I read about in like GamePro as a child, and just you know, instantly always or read it as Wise. You know, when I was like 10 years
Same.
Old.
Same
and,
here.
It's just kind of stuck. So yeah.
Anyway, the ports on iOS are really good. So.
But yeah, so the only game that has any kind of free-to-play stuff in it is Exiled Kingdoms, which is free to download. I don't remember how the payment stuff works, but I don't think it's that aggressive, if I recall correctly.
I think it's maybe there's like a full license, $4.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of a pay-what-you-want situation.
Yeah.
But this game is rad. I remember being turned off because it looks so old school, and I was like, I don't know about this. And I had already downloaded it, but I just never tried it. And I fired it up, and it's rad. It's so open world. It has a very Diablo-like feel to it. And so if you can kind of get over sort of the rough-looking visuals and stuff like that, it's a pretty awesome game. So I can understand now why Sean has been tooting his horn for all these years.
So I would say of this list, my favorites is probably a tie between Battleheart Legacy and Crashlands, but you really can't go wrong with any of them. So
yeah,
especially if you've never played Jade Empire, because that's kind of like a weird BioWare game that came out at an odd time with a strange theme that I don't feel like most people either skipped or, you know,
it got lost in the shuffle. Yeah, time.
Definitely. So that's the news for the week. Let's go through some of the games real quick. So the game I've been playing the most is Campfire Cooking, which is a really, really, really cool puzzle game. And I just kind of like dig how super whimsical the whole thing is, I guess.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
So the basic premise of the game, if you haven't played it yet or watched the trailers or anything, is that it's kind of like a cube rotating game. On a grid, but it's all done with the theme of like you have various foods that you're moving around a campfire, and so like at its most basic, like it has you rolling a marshmallow across squares of fire. And like the idea is like you want to only have each side of the marshmallow go across the fire once. Mm-hmm. So you got to kind of like figure out how to you know, move your marshmallow around and rotate it so you're not going to burn it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you cook it perfectly, and like the game kind of like ramps up pretty well with difficulty. Like I don't want to play too much of it on stream here, so you know, people don't
screwed up.
Yeah,
you screwed up
talking while it's a puzzle game.
But yeah, actually, I think that's one of the nicest things about it. And I'm near the end of like the second set of levels, but just the difficulty ramp is perfect in this. Like it really introduces you to new mechanics in a neat way and kind of eases you into things. And then it gets very complicated once you've learned those things and throws some hard puzzles at you and then introduces a new thing. And so I'm at the point now where, you know, it throws neat things at you. Like there'll be, you know, multiple marshmallows on the spike at once, or multiple, you know, marshmallow sticks in there at once. And then most recently I got to the point where you can actually rotate your stick. You can rotate wooden sticks, not metal ones. So that throws another wrinkle into the whole situation where, you know, you have this puzzle board and you have the areas you need to hit with your food that you want to cook. But you know, being able to rotate the sticks around just changes everything because it changes the way you can roll your food or push your food or whatever. It opens up space for the other sticks. Like there's just so many things going on. So it seems like such a simplistic concept on the surface, but once they start adding these mechanics in, everything gets really nice and complex and very strategic. And yeah, if you like puzzle games, this is definitely a must have.
You know what I like about this so much is that I feel like this game could have very easily been a free-to-play game, you know, with like,
yeah, probably,
I don't know, like credits to play or like undos that they sell or level packs, yeah, you buy or whatever else. And like, it's weirdly refreshing to play a puzzle game where, like for instance, like it has a very generous undo system.
Yeah.
So you're never in a situation with a puzzle where it's like, oh, I'm stuck and like, you know, I need to like, I'm out of lives or,
yeah,
or whatever other kind of thing you've got going on. Like you just, you know, if you mess up, you just hit undo a few times and kind of try something else. And like, it's weird how like that element makes it feel like such a relaxing game compared to, I guess what I've been used to before, where it's like, oh fuck, this is my last Candy Crush life. Like,
yeah, you're, you know, stressing out.
I hope I can make it and
yeah,
all this other stuff. So, just really dig it. Like very cool theme. Like every once in a while you get like a little cutscene with like family driving and you're going through the woods or whatever else, which is pretty cool. You know, as Jared was saying, there's a lot of interesting wrinkles that get added to the game as far as like different levels of complexity is concerned and all this other stuff. So
there's like a nice amount of levels too. Like I said, I'm on the second, you know, set, and I think there's like 7 sets or something like that. So I'm curious to see how many more kind of mechanics they add in. Because I want to say during the trailer, you could see parts where you're like cooking other things other than marshmallows, like, you know, pots of chili and stuff like that too. So I don't really know how this is all going to work out, but I love the progression curve has been really good so far. So
yeah, no, I totally dig this game. So if you don't already have it, I would say this is my favorite game of the week that I've played so far, just because of all the reasons that I have listed so far. So
$4 and no crap.
$4, no shenanigans. Did you play this Darts of Fury game at all?
Not yet, but it caught my attention because it's from the Table Tennis Touch people.
So this game is unbelievably ridiculous. So it's like I don't know anything about darts. Like I don't understand how dart scoring works or anything else like that. But like it is so unbelievably over the top. It's not even funny. Like it takes place in this like robotic coliseum thing with you know, a studio audience watching you, and like, you know, when you win, you get these you know, sparkles all over the board and stuff. Like it lights up like a firework, and there's like all this other crazy crap that happens. And so I don't know, like here, if you're watching the video, you can see what I'm talking about. Like it's, you know, it's
nailed
like,
it. Yeah.
Nailed it. Particle effects everywhere. And like,
so, you know, what's kind of funny is that, this is, it seems like it's probably based in somewhat reality because I've watched darts tournaments on ESPN before, and it's kind of hilarious. Like, I mean, the crowd gets into it, and they bring signs and stuff like that. I mean, it's not like this over the top, but it definitely is more over the top than you'd expect like a darts tournament to be. And so maybe that's where they got the idea to this, is to like take that idea and just ramp it way up. But I love darts games. I think they work really well with touchscreen controls. It's fun to kind of flick the dart. And so I was curious to check this one out. I just hadn't gotten around to it yet. But yeah, it seems cool. And their previous game was awesome. So
well, so what's tricky about it, though, is that like the crux of or what seems to be the main game mode is these multiplayer games that you play and you try to, and I don't know if maybe this is how just darts is played. I have no idea how you play darts. Like I you know, when I play darts, it's like, you know, at a bar and just throw darts at the dartboard and see what happens.
Yeah.
Anything. You know, I have no idea how scoring works. But like what you try to do in the main game mode is hit an exact score total. Mm-hmm. Which is super hard. It's super hard because like I have no idea how you're like what you're supposed to be aiming for.
So it looks like that. So darts is usually playing, there's like 201 and I think 301, and then there's cricket. And, you know, 301 would be like you're counting down from 301 trying to hit, and you got to end on exactly zero. And so, you know, you try to hit the bullseye or the biggest scores you can, the triple 20, as much as you can to knock down the chunk of that 301 points. But then when you get down to the lower part, like, you know, if you only have if you have 15 left to go, you got to either get, you know, triple five or 5-3 times in a row or, you know, whatever. It starts to get a little more skill based where you have to actual aim for certain sections.
Totally noise to me.
Oh, okay. But anyway, yeah, it looks like that's what they're playing, is some sort of form of that because they're counting down. Cricket's more of like hit certain parts of the board certain numbers of times. It's a little more aiming based, but. Well, I don't know. This seems cool. I like all the over-the-top production.
Yeah, over-the-top shit is amazing. Like when you throw the winning shot, it goes into like the slow-mo mode of, you know, shows your dart kind of like swirling in and hitting. Like it's awesome. Really cool. I don't know. Like I know nothing about darts. Like I say, I find this to be confusing. But like if you are in darts, it seems like the ultimate kind of dart game.
I'm excited to check it out now.
You want to talk about Time Recoil real quick?
Yeah. I like this game a lot.
So I haven't filled with this yet. I've been playing the other puzzle games.
Okay. So this is from 10 Tons, who did like Neon Chrome. And it definitely feels in a similar vein to Neon Chrome, but a lot more story-based and less randomly generated or whatever. But the main hook of this is, whereas Neon Chrome's like a straight dual-stick shooter, you know, one stick moves, the other stick shoots and aims, this game is more of a single stick shooter, at least the touchscreen version is, because the hook is that as you get kills, time slows down, and then as you get more kills during slowdown time, you can build up combos which enable like special powers for you. And so it's actually like a really rhythmic sort of game. Instead of just trying to aim and shoot everything you see, you want to like kind of plan out when you're going to shoot people and how many you're going to be in a row. And then if you're going to use the special move that you enable from doing that, it's kind of tricky to explain, but so they actually toned it down from being a normal dual stick shooter like it is on PC, to actually adding an auto aim and making it a single stick shooter. And, I thought that was really disappointing at first, but it's actually, A, it works way better with touchscreen controls, I think, but B, it makes you focus on what the game is built all around, which is that, you know, slow down timing killing portion. And so basically what you want to do is not even really worry about aiming. You kind of just want to move through the levels and let the auto aim do its thing. And you really just kind of try to tap the shoot button, you know, as your auto aim takes hold on people. And it's almost like a rhythm game. Like, I feel weird saying that because there's no rhythm elements or anything like that, but the shooting and the gunplay feels like that. And you really have to kind of disassociate yourself from trying to play it like a dual stick shooter like Neon Chrome. And you have to kind of just embrace the fact that it's a single stick sort of thing and that you're not really going to do any aiming because the game takes care of all that for you. So it's kind of weird. It's different than the traditional version of this game that does have full dual stick shooting. but I like what they've come up with. I think it's a good solution. I see a lot of people asking for true dual stick option, which I don't think it would be bad to have as an option, but I also think it's going to make the game far too fiddly. And, you know, it'll kind of take away from what this game is all about, which is kind of putting together these really cool slow-mo combos. So I don't know. Once I sort of embraced it and sort of came at the game from not trying to be a dual stick shooter, I started having a ton of fun with it. And then you work your way through levels, and each one has different objectives. It's usually kind of like rescuing someone or killing everybody or destroying a bunch of a certain object or whatever. And the storyline is super interesting too. You bounce back and forth between time, and you kind of go back and then affect things that happen when you come back to the present time, which is all kind of like brain twisting and pretty interesting. So yeah, liking this game a lot. But I think the main thing is, don't go in going like, oh, it's the Neon Chrome people. I love Neon Chrome. This game is like that. It is in a lot of ways, but it's pretty different because it's not a straight dual stick shooter. And so as long as you embrace that and go in knowing what you're getting, I think that you'll enjoy the game a lot more instead of being frustrated that you don't have that second stick or whatever.
Yeah, that seems pretty cool. So the last game that I played this week myself is, that I have on my list to talk about anyway, is this Push game.
Yeah.
Which, do you fiddle with this at all? It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It looks awesome though.
So the basic idea of the game is that you need to push all the buttons on a thing, on a shape that, you know, initially kind of looks like, one of those fidget cube sort of things.
Yeah, it does.
But it starts to get weirdly complicated where you need to push the buttons in order and things like that. So like right now, this is like the third level or whatever I'm playing. So like, it's a shape that has three faces. Each face has four buttons, and on the bottom there's two buttons that have a square on them, and on the two sides there are two buttons on each opposite side with circles on them. So to solve this puzzle, I think I need to push these square ones first, then the circle ones, and then just the blank ones and stuff. Which, that's what's basically like. That's kind of what you do. And they and I think it's this next level that no. They quickly introduce a kind of like rotation mechanic where there will be things hidden on other sides of these shapes and things like that. So it's kind of like a fast-paced multi-level puzzle box sort of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like, so this level that I'm on, which I think is the fifth level or something, there's a purple or a pink button that you can press at the bottom to rotate the shape. So you kind of follow along with what you did before and pressing the associated buttons that match different shapes so they all stay down. But you need to pay attention to the different sides of the object that you're fiddling with.
Dang, that's really cool.
So it's pretty cool. It's a neat little puzzle game that it ramps up pretty quickly. Like, what I like about it so much is that it has a thing going the puzzle game Prune, where like you start to do some pretty complicated things, and like there has been no text so far in this game at all.
Yeah, that's rad. It just tosses you in and you figure it out.
And I always really like that when games do this whole like no text teaching thing, because I feel like that's how you know you've got like a really solid game designer, that like it's just obvious how you play it, you know, regardless of how complicated it ends up getting. So but yeah, really, really cool game. I think this is also $3 or something like that. I'm pretty sure it's three or
I'm pretty sure it's paid maybe,
something like that.
99 cents, folks. Well,
there you go. So the last game we have on our list to talk about is KetchUp's Pocket Pool. So this is my first time that I'm screwing with this. So
yeah, I saw this and was like, oh, cool. I like catch-up games, like whatever. And I really like pool games. What I'm really waiting for is like a really good traditional pool game, which I thought this might be, but then I realized it's catch-up and it's totally not.
Yeah, mini pool game is pretty good if you never fill around
with
that.
Yeah, I do like that game. But anyway, so what this is it's a high-scoring game that essentially just brings up a chunk of a pool table, just one hole on a pool table, or one pocket, I guess I should say, and gives you a quick little setup, and all you really need to do is hit one ball in, the target ball, and that's it. and you can scratch, you can hit the cue ball in and it doesn't, you know, count or whatever. You can knock into other balls and, you know, get your ball in a sloppy fashion and it doesn't matter. Your main goal is just get the red ball in each situation that it throws at you and do it as many times in a row as you can. And then that ends up being your high score. And then there's certain things you can do to get like bonus points and stuff along the way. But it's really clever. It's just a really, like most catch-up games, it's a really well implemented control scheme and really conducive to one thumb play. And just the nature of it is that you don't have to think too much about it. You just kind of like pull back to draw your cue back and determine like, you know, the strength of your shot and stuff, and then aim towards the ball. There's kind of a tiny little line that'll give you an idea of where you're aiming and try and hit the ball in. And that's really all you do. And so, at first I was sort of like, oh, I wish this was a full-blown pool game. But then the more I played it, I was like, damn, this is really fun. It's just, you know, it's kind of mindless, but kind of not. It kind of straddles that line. And the other thing I really liked about it is when I first started playing, I was trying to pull back on the actual cue stick everywhere it was. And it's because this
you shot don't have to do that?
Different angles. Huh. You can actually drag from anywhere. And so it makes it even better of like a one-handed game because you just kind of got to worry about what perspective you're aiming from, but you can drag actually from anywhere. And so it makes it very easy to play. And so, yeah, I don't know. I guess the headline would be Catch-Up makes another really good mobile game that's perfect to kind of pull out and play whenever you want.
So I one thing that just playing this game for as long as we've been talking about it now is that this is a game that I would pay 99 cents or whatever to unlock checkpoints or something.
I think it randomly throws the setups at you. I think so.
Yeah, but there's definitely like a difficulty curve, right? And like once
they seem to get more complicated. Yeah,
like, you know, and this is my first couple of playthroughs, so maybe you get better than this, but like once I get around level 15, like things start to get interesting with like other balls and kind of trickier shots and stuff like that. And but like up to then it's like, all right, hit the ball straight. Okay, hit the ball straight again.
And I think 32 is where I've gotten to. And you also unlock different color table felts, different kinds of cue sticks, things like that, which is kind of cool. I mean, it gives you something to shoot for, but more than anything, it's just kind of a mindless high scoring game.
Yeah.
With cool mechanics, billiards mechanics. So I don't know.
Well, that was cool. Ketchup once again has made a good video game.
But yeah, it's free with ads. So we're checking out. And then you can disable ads. I think it was $1.99, which I did.
Well, I guess that's our podcast for this week. Unless you have anything else that you want to talk about or add or anything else.
I don't think so. Good to be back doing shows.
Yeah. So sorry for the 2 weeks we missed, but thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of Touch Arcade Show. If you like what we do around here, there's two main ways you can support us. It's either at patreon.com/touch arcade or by doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. So you mentioned at the start, there's we stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/TouchArcade, as well as discord.gg/TouchArcade. And, that's our Discord, obviously. But if you like the show, please leave us a nice interview. Otherwise, if you want to send us an email for any reason, suggest stuff to talk on the show or just other stuff, it's podcast@TouchArcade.com. Other than that, I think that is it for this week's episode. I feel like we could do an entire second podcast and nothing but Stardew Valley, but...
Probably, that's such a good idea. Let's do that.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Mm-hmm.